Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome.
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Russell Johnson of RebelGrove.com, Rivals.com is here as well. We'll get to your questions from RebelGrove.com in a little bit. We'll also visit with Ronnie Hamilton, the one of Ole Miss's top basketball assistant coaches. We spent about 27 minutes with him talking about Ole Miss basketball recruiting, a lot of stuff. So you'll enjoy that conversation, and we'll play it for you here in a little bit. We'll talk to Russell. We'll get some football recruiting. I saw Matt Luke out at FNC Park yesterday. He was out there being a dad. You know, sometimes he's not just a football robot. He's a dad. And we talked briefly. They're still sort of in the evaluation period with some stuff. Spring games, not spring games, but jamborees and such are going on. They are spring games. They have their big, a lot of their camps and stuff in June, a lot of evaluations. So that's in basketball and football as well. There's just, it never really stops. You get a little bit of a break in July and then it's bang, off to the races once again. So we'll talk some football recruiting in a little bit. First, let me tell you about Billy's Pecans. Billy's Pecans knows the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for the staff, tokens of goodwill for a referral, from 5 to 5,000 orders. They'll handle it all with expertise and excellence, all with their signature Southern style and with items at every price point. You can't choose wrong. Try the assorted gift bags, 8 ounces each. They make perfect hostess or thank you gifts. The best-selling party trio, 3 pecan treats of your choice. They're all fantastic. I like just the salted pecans. Others like different kinds. You can try 3 different kinds with the party trio. The pecans and chocolate, if you want something a little sweeter, they've got that as well. The coffee cakes, cheese straws, everything at Billy's is delectable. Additionally, you can customize your packaging with your company or organization's logo affixed as a sticker to their round boxes so your brand is front of mind. Their decadent flavors are there to back it up. Homemade treats, easy ordering, professionally packaged, shipped fresh and direct. It's the process of doing business with Billy's Pecans. It couldn't be any more satisfying. It's billyspecans.com. That's B-I-L-L-I-E-S pecans.com. Or 1-800-624-7404. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. Call the number 662-257-1900. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. And he'll send you a quote on that Ford within 15 minutes in business hours. You get your quote. And then, frankly, it's just kind of up to you at that point. You can shop it around. You can look for a better quote. Good luck. Or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other podcast listeners, self included, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a great new Ford, great service after the sale, and delivery options, all of those things at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. We'll make it just a little better. Tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. It's $500 off the already great bottom line at Clark Ford. Russell, how are you, sir?
Doing good. I'm experiencing my first, I guess, the beginning of summer. I'm not sure if spring ever really came here, did it? Or was it, is this spring?
This is not normal.
I was going to say.
Normally we have some spring. And we had a little spring, but it was a cold spring. And we went straight from cold to hot.
Yeah, because I spent a few days in Memphis this week, and it was close to 100 degrees, and you could feel, oh man, I've never been this tan in May in my entire life. It's completely different world. Around this time, a couple years ago in Ohio, actually, we had a pretty big snowstorm in May. It was right before I was finishing up some classes at the University of Akron, and they had literally canceled and postponed finals because of the snow. It was And then to think of the calendar today and to look, and it's May 17th, and it's close to 90 degrees yesterday. And
it's record heat.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's record heat. It's all over the South. I saw Nashville, Atlanta, everywhere. It was record heat. And so as we're taping this, it's getting ready to storm, because when it's this hot, the atmosphere just gets crazy. So
yeah, I mean, sorry about the weather portion of the podcast, but it's been unavoidable to talk about and to experience, you know, going to all these schools. By the time I finish on Friday and Saturday, I'll be at, I think, 35 schools I've been to between Mississippi and Memphis. I didn't get down to Hattiesburg, which I was kind of upset about. I didn't get down to the Vicksburg area. I didn't get to see Brandon's playing, I think, Warren Central tonight, depending on the weather. I won't be able to make it there. There's several Ole Miss targets there, but you know, that's quite a drive. I'll probably save that for the summer. And, you know, all the work I've done this spring, I'm going to have a little bit of an easier time, you know, getting into these rooms, talking to the coaches, and that's going to be awesome going forward.
Yeah. You've been busting it. Yeah. You've been all over the place, which is good. That's what those relationships enable you to get information when it gets crunch time and late in the recruiting process, when everyone's sick of it. Because that's what happens, is everyone gets sick of it, and then they just don't want to talk, except to the people that, well, I've talked to him forever, I'll tell him real quick.
That's right. And then as long as you don't, you know, burn them by, you know, trying to be the first to do something, you know, or to break a story or do anything like that, you know, those relationships can continue going forward. And you know, it's not like Ole Miss is ever going to just stop recruiting Mississippi. Their emphasis on Mississippi is stronger now than it probably ever has been. And as bad as they have been in recent years in Memphis, with the recent offers going out in that area, it seems like they're still interested in, you know, possibly figuring out a way to repair the situation. You know, I'd mentioned a few weeks ago that they had kind of shifted the coaches around the area, with Summerall getting a few of the different high schools in the area, and Harris still having some as well. And then, you know, being able to do that's big.
All right, how you want to do this? You want to get to the basketball first, and then we'll come back and take mailbag?
That works perfectly.
All right, let's do that. Ronnie Hamilton joined us earlier today, about 27 minutes. A lot of people have wanted a basketball recruiting update. Ole Miss has been very busy. They're not quite done, maybe, perhaps, possibly, maybe. It's one of those deals. We touch on that a little bit in our interview with Ronnie Hamilton. We talk about recruiting the current players, rebuilding the roster for the coming season, and then his thoughts on the program as a whole, what this program can be once they have a chance to really recruit down the line. So I think you'll enjoy the interview that Russell and I conducted with Ronnie Hamilton of Ole Miss Basketball. We'll come back from this interview, and we will take your questions on rebelgrove.com. But for now, here's Ronnie Hamilton. Take a listen. All right, Ronnie, thanks so much for being with us. I know you guys have been, as I was saying a minute ago, kind of picking them up and putting them down since you landed in Oxford in March. You haven't had a chance to probably come up for air yet. That time is approaching here. What have the last couple of months been like, I guess, professionally, obviously, and then from a personal level, trying to, you know, acclimate, leaving Murfreesboro, getting to Oxford, all the stuff that goes with moving and changing jobs? Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of, you have to be prepared for it as a coach in this business, this profession. You know, this move was, it was quick and sudden in terms of, I think we played Louisville on Sunday, lost in the second round of NIT, and was on a flight with Coach Davis here Monday. So the turnaround was extremely quick. But we had a little bit of a chance to prepare just because of the announcement was some days before, but I mean, as soon as we got here, I mean, it was like hitting the ground running, literally. I mean, we went through the press conference and meeting the team and all the administrative stuff you had to do to officially start, to the next day on Tuesday flying to Hutchinson, Kansas, watching the national junior college championships. And you know, from there, I mean, I can't even remember all the places we've been. But it's been great, because I think we got a lot of what we wanted to accomplish in the I guess it's about 5 to 6 weeks now, in terms of just getting to know the current guys, getting a feel for campus and the lay of the land of Oxford and Ole Miss. And obviously from a recruiting standpoint, getting a lot of guys on campus and trying to put together a team next year that compete in the SEC and hopefully make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, you kind of had a three-pronged recruiting approach right off the bat, right? I mean, you kind of had to recruit the kids that were already here, because it's a shock for any group when a coaching staff is let go and a new staff comes in. It's all the transition. You had to some degree, kind of rebuild the roster so that you'll have a team to put on the court in 2018. And then, obviously, you had to do what every program's doing this time of year, which is recruiting for the future. You got to recruit 2-3 years out or else you're in trouble. How difficult was it to sort of balance those three things?
You know, you're exactly right. I mean, that's really, without the first component, is what you're always doing. Obviously, recruiting for the present or the next year in terms of building a roster for the immediate future. And then, especially at this level, you've got to recruit with a year or 2 years down the line. With the level, high-level guys or really talented players that are in high school, it starts earlier and earlier. But then you add that first component in terms of your own team, it makes it even more challenging. And that was really the more important because, the guys that are here now were most important. And so we had to balance it because you do have to take advantage of the days you can be out to get in front of recruits, prospective recruits. But when we were here and even on the road, just through communication and calling, we wanted to put a lot of emphasis and focus on just getting to know the current players. One of the neat things is we had played them the last really 3 years, one time in the scrimmage and then, the game here 2 years ago and then in Murfreesboro this past season. So there was some familiarity there in terms of just watching them on tape and watching them in person, competing against them. And I think on both ends, which I think helped them have a little bit of trust in us, or at least acknowledgement of us, our staff with Coach Davis and then Coach Case when we initially came in. And then it's just that building the trust of just getting to know them, which it takes time. You can't build trust. It's like any relationship, whether it's a coaching relationship or a dating relationship, whatever it may be, it takes time to build trust. So we tried to just really do that with just a lot of time spent with all the current guys. And I think over the last 4 or 5 weeks, that's improved tremendously. And so they've been really receptive, been great in workouts. They had a great finish to the academic semester. And they give those guys a lot of credit. They had a longer period of time without a head coach or a staff or anybody to really call coach. And the longer it goes, the more uncertainty I'm sure they felt. I've been really proud of all the current guys. And then, like you said, there's about, I told a coaching friend or high school coach, AU coaches, as we were trying to recruit for 2018, we would be on the road somewhere, and I would say, half our team is in Oxford, the other half, we don't know where they're from right now. So yeah. We had to kind of put together a large group of guys to complement the guys that were here. And, we try to be really patient early to make sure we got the right guy, not just get a guy. And a lot of times in the late signing period, that can happen. And so as we went through trying to really figure out who was the best fit, from a basketball standpoint, from a culture standpoint, over the last two weeks, we felt like we were able to do that and really excited about the group that'll come in starting this summer that'll be ready in the fall. And then, like you said, just starting to recruit down the line with the 19s and 20s and 21s, what was really good for us that we had already started because of the success we had in middle recruiting a high level guy, so to speak. And so we have made some inroads on some really talented guys we think can play the SEC already. And so now it just became a situation where we were talking about Ole Miss as opposed to MTSU. And so we've had great interest, great excitement for the future of Ole Miss basketball. We're just going to continue that throughout the rest of the summer.
You guys signed, as we taped this on, was today Thursday? I've lost track. As we tape this on Thursday, you guys signed Carlos Curry yesterday. I talked to him yesterday. Really nice kid. Big kid who informed me that he would much rather be called a stretch four than a center. He can play center, but he'd rather be called a stretch four. I guess I've talked to him and KJ Buffin and Blake Henson. Really nice kids. With that group, and then I know you guys added a couple that the previous staff had gotten commitments from or signed, I guess. Out of that group, How many of those guys do you anticipate being able to come in and kind of help you right away? How many of those guys have to come in and help you right away just based on numbers?
Yeah. You know, I think some of that has to be determined, you know, throughout the summer. We're going to be able to go on a foreign trip in August to Canada, which I think will be really beneficial for our team. We'll get 10 extra practices outside of the 8 weeks you get in the summer. It'll also increase the number of hours you can be on the floor. NCAA just passed a new rule that goes from 2 hours a week to four. So, again, it'll help us as we're trying to, you know, transition and get guys to kind of understand our system and what we expect. And I just think with the current guys and new guys who can come in and really acclimate themselves and all that stuff really be determined within the next 8-10 weeks. Now, you know, Blake Henson is a guy that we feel like because of his size and his skill level and the level he's played at Sunrise and through AAU basketball that will have a chance to make an impact early. KJ Buffin is extremely talented, somebody we thought could be maybe freshman year in Conference USA as a freshman. And Carlos, you know, at 6'11", all these guys now with size want to be stretched forward, pick and pop forwards, face up forwards, just the whole Kevin Durant phenomenon. But he truly does. He has face up skills. He's a South Georgia kid, which a lot of times those guys kind of fly on the radar, which is what happened to him. But for his size, I mean, he can shoot threes. He can advance the ball up the floor on the break off one or two dribbles. Got great hands. So, just how much he can transition and get his body in better shape determine how quick he can really play extended minutes on the full force next year. But I think all our guys, new guys, will have a chance to make impacts early. And I'm really looking forward to the foreign trip. You know, 2 years ago, the team that beat Michigan State in the NCAA tournament, we were in the middle. We went on a foreign trip to the Bahamas, and I thought it really gave us an advantage early in the year, prepared for conference, the non-conference schedule that was really tough, and then obviously prepared us to have a great year throughout the season. I think this trip will be able to do the same thing for our team here at Ole Miss.
You mentioned Kevin Durant. Is he the guy that used to play in Oklahoma City?
That guy, yeah.
Whatever happened to him?
He's still playing right now.
Oh, really?
Playoff.
Oh, I didn't know that. He left the Thunder, and I thought he just fell off the face of the map. I remember him a little bit. He was a good player for a while. I'm kidding.
He's a really good player.
Yeah, we really don't talk about him in my house. He's he who shall remain nameless most of the time. and my son's a big Russell Westbrook fan, and we don't talk about that July 4th. That was not a good day. Here at the McCrady house, Ronnie. It was not a good day at all. There was some violence that occurred to a large cardboard cutout of He Who Shall Remain Nameless. It didn't go well.
We think alike. I'm a huge Westbrook's probably one of my favorite players in the NBA. So I've been following him for a long time. I was hurt as well when he left. I thought they had, you know, something special at OKC. But I tell you, he's made every – if you talk to any kid now that's 6'7" and above, they never want to be labeled a post player. They want to be considered like Kevin Durant. So he's still impacting young kids right now.
Yeah, the game's so much on the perimeter now too that if you can't shoot some from the perimeter, you better be able to really do a lot of other things because you almost become a liability with everyone switching on switching in all five spots and all that stuff. The game's just, at least my observation of it, you would know it 1,000 times better than I would, if not more. It's a much more perimeter athletic game than maybe it was even, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, no, you're exactly right. I mean, it kind of speaks to what we do, you know. I think what people can expect to see from our team and our program, Coach Davis is probably the last 6-7 years is really emphasized having all five guys on the floor that can pass, dribble, and shoot. As simple as it sounds, it does. It makes you really hard to guard. And so in recruiting, we've tried to look for those things, you know, whether it's a guy who's 5'10 or 6'10. If you can put all five guys out there that can do that, then you can stretch the floor. You have to have, the defense cover everybody. You know, you can attack long closeouts. So that's something that the game has really gone to, and we've tried to adapt and adopt it and our style of play and through the guys we've been trying to recruit here.
Speaking of, you know, recruiting and everything, when you first got to Ole Miss, obviously there was a difference in the in-state recruiting between the state of Tennessee and Mississippi. What has your reception really been like since you got to Ole Miss from the in-state programs?
As far as the state of Mississippi?
Yes.
You know, I think there's always been players. It really reminds me, when I was at Tulane and we were in Louisiana at the time, you know, there were so many good players in the state of Louisiana that you just, unless you just did your homework and were connected to the right people, you may have been, you know, you may have missed on just because you didn't take the time to really research. And I think the state of Mississippi is similar in a lot of ways. There's good talent in this state. You've got to really be connected. You've got to really do your homework. You've got to really have a pulse of guys, you know, throughout their whole, you know, seek careers in terms of high school guys, getting on guys that are really good early. But then there's guys that develop late in these. I think, you know, Mississippi and Louisiana are very similar. And so one thing that we said when we got here, Coach Davis being from Mississippi, I think, you know, knows the state as well as anybody. But we've said that we've got to improve in the state. And, you know, I know school down the road has gotten more guys that have gone on and had great college careers and even played in the NBA. That's something we definitely want to change here at Ole Miss while we're here. And so we've made a huge effort to connect to all the high school coaches and, you know, AU guys in the state. And we've had a couple guys come spend some time with us. You know, it's in you know, high school and the AU programs here in the state of Mississippi. And so we're going to do that even more this summer, you know, through our team camp and through our elite camp and just on the road. We're evaluating guys in July. And but it's a major – you got to take care of your own backyard. We've always believed in that. Well, then it's something that we're going to – it's going to be a huge priority for us, you know, presently and going in, you know, towards the future.
I got you. Now, in terms of finishing up the class of 2018, obviously you can't comment on specific targets and names and anything, but, you know, do you have any spots remaining and where are you thinking those might fit?
You know, it's like the definition of recruiting in general, you're never done, if that makes sense. You know, we're still always trying to make our team better, whether it's currently or in the future. And so there's some possibilities out there in 18 that we're still exploring that could possibly happen. You know, the rage now with high school guys is just a reclassification. It used to be guys about 5-7 years ago all wanted to reclass down a grade. They were trying to, you know, stay extra, an extra year in high school where they thought it was going to help them mature physically or just help their recruitment. And now, I think part of it is because of one and done, guys trying to, you know, try to get to the next level, whether it be college, and then next level, whether it be, you know, the NBA, get there quicker. We've seen kids for the last 2-3 years reclass up. You know, so, and Blake Henson's obviously a perfect example of that. Was originally thought to be in the 2019 class, thought he was ready from a, you know, game and maturity and physical standards, you know, point to start this fall. And there's about a handful of guys that's currently still deciding and debating on doing that right now. And so we've got to explore some of those options. Like I said, you're never done, and we're just going to keep trying to improve our team as much as we can. And so we'll go through this summer and just see kind of what's on the horizon maybe for even, you know, our 2018 class and next year's team.
Numbers always work out. That's what I always tell people. It always comes up in football, Ronnie, more than basketball. You know, football fans will say, we only have 6 spots left. There's 14 targets. What if? And I always just say, you know, numbers have a way of working out. They always work out. Don't worry about it. They'll work out.
Put that on repeat and keep reminding people. Before August 22nd or 24th, we'll be at 13. We just got to make sure it's the right 13.
In the past, you know, and look, Ole Miss has only been in the pavilion for a couple of years. Before that, you know, the TUI Center wasn't built until just a few years ago. And before that, they were everything was at Tad Smith Coliseum. God rest its soul. What's the ceiling for that program? Can you win nationally big at Ole Miss?
I think without a doubt you can. You know, here's what's so exciting for Coach Davis, you know, obviously the head coach and us as a staff. You know, we've always been able to win, whether it was me with Coach, you know, previously and Coach through his whole coaching career. We've always been able to win with less. And now here, the beauty of this opportunity, this job, this program is you don't have to do that. You know, you get all the resources that you need. Facilities are as good as there is in the country. And this fan base is passionate. I think they're just, you know, waiting for a consistent winner. And so just our, you know, passion ourselves in terms of what we know we can do here and the support that we have. I think there's no ceiling on what Ole Miss basketball can be even next year and obviously in the years to come. And, you know, we were in middle for the last 2 years, we ranked top 25 in the country. And, you know, the program that you know, it's hard to do that. And so, you know, we said to ourselves, we said to recruits, to coaches, if we can do it there in that league, at that program, and there's no reason why we can't do it here at Ole Miss. You know, I know the league is really good, but I think it's a league that's very, very winnable. You know, if you look at last year, I think Auburn was picked 10th in the league. Tennessee was picked 11th or 9th and 10th, somewhere in that range, I know. And both of them tied for first in the league. So, you know, we have expectations next year to compete right away. And, we, you know, again, the middle, you know, we played, you know, SEC teams, obviously Ole Miss being one of them the last two or three years and had success. So we know we have a style of play. We know we have a culture and a system and a way of winning. And we just got to implement it here and get the right guys here, which we feel like we have a great group already. And so I just think there's no ceiling on how good we can be. And as we get kids here on campus, what we found, you know, with high school guys, you know, we've had some, obviously 18s, we've had 19s here, 20s, and we've had 21s already, and we'll get more and more of those guys on campus. Once they get here and see the spirit of Ole Miss and see the facilities and get around our staff, I think we can compete against anybody in the country. And we've kind of proven that already through recruiting, and we're just going to continue to do that. And we're just looking forward to the summer and then obviously next season.
One of the things that I failed to ask you about earlier, I should have asked you about it earlier, but I'll ask now because I know there's some fans that want to know. Terrence Davis declared for the draft without hiring an agent, so he had the option to come back. Where does that stand with him right now?
Yeah, he's still going through the process. I think it's a great rule that you can go and declare, and obviously his case, still keep your college eligibility intact, you know, without hiring an agent. So he's had, you know, several NBA workouts. I think he'll have a couple more. And it's great just to get the feedback. We've talked to a lot of NBA personnel about him, and they said it's, you know, only can help him going forward. You know, if you look at guys in the past drafts or past years that have done the same thing, and then take that feedback you get from, you know, NBA people, NBA teams, and really try to, you know, take advantage of making use of it, you know, throughout this offseason and even going forward through next year. So he's in the process of doing that. You know, I think we feel that he'll come back. You know, he still has about two or three more weeks. I think June 10th or June 11th is the day before you have to officially declare. We've talked to him every day in this whole process, and Terrence has been great. So, you know, we're expecting to be back and just kind of been supportive through this whole process.
Whenever I've watched y'all's teams at Middle Tennessee the last few years when you were there, the two things that always stuck out was obviously the 1-3-1, the way that it was run was a problem for other teams to figure it out. And then secondly, it was just more of a characteristic. There was just a toughness, a grittiness to those Middle Tennessee teams. And again, I was only seeing them once a year in person and you know, at times on television or whatnot. So I certainly was not an expert on the teams that you guys put on the floor there in Murfreesboro. But that always stuck out. There was a toughness, a grittiness, a selflessness that stuck out. and I mean that as a compliment. How long, how hard is it to instill that into a team, and then from a technical aspect of teaching the intricacies of that 1-3-1, how long of a process is that?
You know, it's a great compliment, you know, for the things that you mentioned, and you're very observant. That's what we try to build our program around, you know, toughness and unselfishness and just skilled. And so we've already, you know, tried to do instill in some of those same things here. It takes time. You know, you can't get it all done, or, you know, I know the old cliche is wrong wouldn't build in a year. And so we understand it's a process. That's why, kind of like I said, we're really excited about, you know, the summer and this form too. I think will really help speed up that process. But we want to be known for the same characteristics as people have seen past teams we've coached play like. And we've talked to our team here about, you know, those things already. And so even these workouts we were able to do those first, I guess, 4 weeks, you know, we've tried to – now, I hadn't done as much with the 1-3-1 yet, but just from a detailed, you know, teaching standpoint, being very exact. That's one thing that we really focus on is being exact in how we do things, the tempo of practice every day. We've started to, you know, show our guys here, you know, what we expect on an everyday basis. And they, like I said, they've given them a lot of credit. They've really bought into it, you know, over 3 or 4 week period being with us. Especially on the floor. And so then we also try to do those things all the court. And so if you're doing it in all the areas, it just becomes natural. And that's how you kind of create the culture that we had there, which is a big reason why we had the success we've had. So we want to be very, very similar, play the same way. You know, obviously take advantage of different strengths within each team you have. But that's going to be something that we really, really, really want to do. And then, you know, the 1-3-1, it has been a staple, you know, and it's funny because as the years pass, we start playing teams, and more teams, we start looking up, and we kind of saw more teams trying to play it. And even Ole Miss, you know, last couple of years. So I think the guys have some familiarity with it because they've obviously played some the last couple of years with AK putting it in. And we'll kind of teach some different things that we do. And, you know, everybody who ran it, you know, Coach Davis, it's been kind of given credit for it, which you should. But then there's some intricacy that we know of and that we do that's probably a little different than the people who just try to study and use it on their own. So it'll be a staple. I think it'll probably be even more effective in some ways because just of our length we'll have here. We'll have a little more athleticism. And so as we get into these practices in the summer, especially late July, we'll have it to use and to implement, you know, over in this Canadian trip.
It's as frustrated as I've ever seen Andy Kennedy. It was a game in Oxford with Middle, and if I remember right, you guys just jumped on Ole Miss out of the gate, built a huge lead. They came back and made it a pretty competitive game late. Middle Tennessee won, and after the game, we in the media asked Kennedy about the start, and he said, you know, it's the most frustrating thing is that you're exactly right, Ronnie, that they had installed basically that exact defense form, you know, and installed it based on what they had seen by playing those Middle Tennessee teams. And he said, you know, it's one thing when your kids have never seen it, you understand that. He goes, we've practiced it, it's what we do. And it's still, it's like you said, it's one thing to try to emulate something, it's another thing to try to be as successful as the original. And you guys at Middle Tennessee, when y'all were there, that thing was I watched that thing give teams fits.
Yeah, no doubt. It was so funny. We were sitting having dinner with Recruit and Brian and Tia, a dinner with us hosting, and we were talking about our games. And they said, Coach, he said, we kept telling Coach, you know, AK, he said, man, we can't run the 1-3-1 on the team that's known for it, you know. So we laughed about it, and, you know, I said, we see it. Our eyes kind of light up because we know all the tendencies and all the weak spots and how to attack it. So it's a compliment. The teams have started running against us, but it's something that we're well equipped to handle. And so hopefully we have a lot of success with it here as well. I think we will, and we're looking forward to kind of being able to put it in, and we'll do some different things even with that we weren't able to do on years past.
Well, hey, we really appreciate the time today. You guys have have put a lot of excitement back into a fan base. I know a lot of people are excited about basketball, and it's still in terms of getting on the floor and playing actual games, it's still many months away, and you guys have people excited. So congratulations, and we'd love to visit with you again soon.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for all you do. Looking forward to the season. And thanks so much.
Thanks, Ronnie. Talk to you soon. Our thanks to Ronnie Hamilton for his time today on the podcast. It is a podcast that is also brought to you by the Storage Acquisition Group. The Storage Acquisition Group is an industry-leading expert at identifying and acquiring strategically located storage facilities throughout North America and beyond. As the preferred buyer of one of the largest private owners of self-storage in the world, Director Monty Spencer and his team have upended the acquisitions market by giving facility owners a new avenue to divest. How exactly can self-storage facility owners benefit? It's simple. The group buys direct and charges no commission or fees. Their free, no obligation evaluation even means that you can get a comprehensive picture of your property's value without the need to commit. If you're thinking, yeah, but I don't own a self-storage facility, I was just listening to the podcast. Well, listen to this. Even if you're not an owner, you can benefit too. The Storage Acquisition Group's buyer has a generous referral program that's in place for referrals that lead to a closed transaction. Visit www.thestorageacquisitiongroup.com to find out more. All right, Russell, let's get into the questions this week on the mailbag. A little programming note, not sure what we'll do next week. If we tape, we'll have to tape the first 2 days of the week, so it'll be a short podcast if we have one. So and then after that, it'll be into the month of June. And recruiting.
Yeah, camps will be here. The camps at Ole Miss are going to be the first part of June, and then they'll have the big 7-on-7 tournament with all the local area teams. And then that's really when they get into the evaluation and, you know, deciding on whether or not they're going to take the kids they already have committed and, you know, whether or not they're going to extend new offers in state. Because the big thing with offers in state, which is kind of what you saw in the recruitment of KJ Jefferson, the quarterback who's likely going to commit to Arkansas this weekend, is that once you pull the trigger on an offer, you can't go back. Because if you go back on an in-state kid with an offer, things are going to get really hairy, either with the high school coach, and you really don't want to burn those bridges, especially as a staff when they're placing as much of an emphasis as they are on the state of Mississippi.
All right, let's go right here. I know this will shock you. The first question comes from C-Strand. Just playing with you, C-Strand. Update on Derek Hall. Has Ole Miss slowed down in recruiting him?
Ole Miss hasn't slowed down in recruiting him. It seems like he's slowed down in being interested in Ole Miss. Mississippi State and Auburn are the top two for him right now. The University of Georgia is still flirting around with him a little bit. They're in that whole little keep it warm thing. Hall is an interesting recruit from the state of Mississippi because he's such a diehard Georgia fan that they could offer December 19th or whenever, the day before the early signing period, and they could say, hey, we want you to hold off. We want you to come visit again. We want to talk to you. We want to do this. And he would probably postpone his commitment or his, you know, his signing and be interested. So that's something to keep an eye on there, as well as the Gulfport Ole Miss connection and the fact that Ole Miss was his first offer. And he'd probably be on the commitment list, to be honest with you, if it wasn't for that snowstorm we had. Was it snow or ice, or was it just cold and everybody shut down?
It was really cold, and the forecast called for a bunch of stuff that didn't happen.
That's right, because they were going to have damn near the entire top 20 in Mississippi on campus at that time, and that was right when Hogg first got the offer. He was really high on Ole Miss. You know, he was high off of getting that first offer to the point to where everybody thought he was ready to pull the trigger right then and there had he been able to make it to campus, but that didn't end up happening, and you've kind of seen what's gone on from there. You know, like I said, Auburn's making a big push. Auburn's making a big push on a ton of kids in state. I'm not exactly sure who they're going to get, but there's going to be one or two of the outliers who, you know, don't normally leave the state but might this year.
It's hard for you to give a – I'll save the prediction for who Ole Miss gets in Mississippi in 19 for something you can write. How about that? Because that's a lot to go through.
That's a lot because, you know, there's new emerging prospects every time I go out and see a high school, I'm like, hey, you know, this kid can play D1 ball.
I'll also save the, because it's a good question about visits and recruitment stuff. I'll let you, it'd be easier for you to write about that, to how that happens, how the camp circuit sort of changes the recruiting of different kids. Reb in Madison wants to know, biggest competition for Plumlee's signature, to your knowledge, how important is playing baseball in college for him, I would assume, and any chance that he signs with the team just because he wants to play quarterback at the next level?
So I'll answer the last question first. There is a real chance that he signs with the team just because they want him to play quarterback. Going back again to the University of Georgia, I mean, this isn't a Georgia podcast, but Georgia's trying so hard in the state of Mississippi that they offered Plumlee at quarterback. Georgia's going to have two quarterbacks in their meeting room coming this fall. They're going to have Justin Fields and they're going to have Jake Fromm. That's it. That's all they're going to have in their quarterback meeting room. And they want to sign between one to two quarterbacks. So they are one of the schools that have offered Plumlee a chance to play quarterback. Now, would he ever see the field? Probably not a quarterback, but just having his signature and him, his potential depth being there is what they're interested in. But then you've got schools like Arizona State, Mississippi State, Auburn. You've got schools all over the country who are interested in Plumlee at quarterback and at athlete. You know, with Ole Miss, they'll try to get it out from different media sources and other people that they might give Plumlee a chance at quarterback, but Plumlee knows, his family knows, and the coaches recruiting Plumlee know he's not going to play quarterback at Ole Miss, regardless of what happens with the recruiting board, whatever happens with Tisdale. It's not going to happen. Even if Tisdale were to somehow decommit and end up staying in the state of Texas, Plumlee would not be on their quarterback board. Plumlee to them is a slot receiver and a DB, which is something that, you know, the wide receiver room could really use going forward.
Reb and Madison also wants to know, most underrated 2019 Mississippi recruit that has a chance to receive offers on the camp circuit.
So Oxford and Lafayette have had this rivalry going on for what I assume is several years. And last year, Lafayette hired an Oxford coach on their staff. And when they did that, he brought with him quite a few kids from Oxford High School to Lafayette. And Oxford High School made sure they were ruled ineligible for their junior seasons. So coming into his senior season this fall, linebacker Eric Jeffries, who hasn't gained the attention that I expected him to, but he really hasn't been out to the camps and he hasn't really done much. I mean, he's had spring practice at Lafayette, got to work out in front of all the coaches. I think there might have been between 30 and 35 different colleges who saw Lafayette practice this spring. Obviously, they were looking at Brandon Turnage, 2022 quarterback. I know you love talking about the young guns. 2022 quarterback, Tyrus Williams. And with that, you know,
2022 would be an eighth grader right now. Is that correct?
Yeah. You'd actually be shocked. An eighth grader almost won quarterback MVP at the Rivals camp in Nashville over the weekend. But going back to Lafayette and Eric Jeffries, I think once people see his size and his, you know, his speed and ability, I mean, he's a workout warrior. And once you see that, and if you can get him in, you know, any type of drills, or you go see him practice at Lafayette in the summer, you'll see the tools that are necessary to play D1 ball.
Okay, here's the obligatory N'Kobe Dean update.
See, the thing with N'Kobe Dean is many people are talking to, I don't know how to say this the right way, the wrong sources. When you talk to sources around different schools, like if you talk to a Stanford source, they'll say that they feel confident because they're going to get him for an official in January. But if you talk to anybody else, if you even talk to Dean himself or his family, he is really turned off by the fact that they don't want him visiting until January. He wants to kind of have a mindset made up, probably a top five, a top three, maybe even a top two going into the end of his senior season before making a decision. And with that, I think Stanford's basically out of the picture. He's going to Georgia this weekend, so that's big. I'm not sure if Radar is going with him. I wouldn't consider the two a package deal, but they want to go to the same school together if it works out. But obviously, like I was talking about with Stanford, if Stanford or Florida State even, because Dean is interested in Florida State, he's probably going to visit there in the summer. They're not really recruiting Radar Jones, so that's something to keep an eye on. Ole Miss is really high on them both, to the point to where if somehow they weren't able to get Dean, they would still take Jones. With guys talking about C-Strand, of course, is talking about Alabama, Stanford, Auburn, and Florida State. Auburn's not completely out of it, but they're not up there, I wouldn't think, with the upper echelon of his top group. Ole Miss is up there. Mississippi State's trying to, but I don't see them being a realistic factor. Florida State, like I had mentioned, Georgia, Alabama's down there with Auburn, but they have a chance to, you know, to fix their way back in.
Okay, along these lines, someone says, EA Fins Up says, Mingo, Dean, Turnage, Plumlee, and Jones. Would you agree that all of these guys end up at Ole Miss?
No.
Okay, who doesn't?
Plumlee.
Okay. The other four?
What's today's date?
This is the part of recruiting that's funny, is it's May the 17th as we tape this. It's almost impossible to predict a class on May the 17th.
Unless Alabama offers Mingo, I'll say yes to the other four.
Okay. Alabama offers Mingo, they get him?
Yes.
Okay. What about Handy?
I mentioned an updated look at the qualifiers and the potential non-qualifiers this past week. You know, really, in the state of Mississippi, there needs to be something, you know, centrally located, and it needs to be in a handy area where people are able to find it at all times, because it seems like, at least from what I've seen from, you know, going to high schools and talking to coaches and everything, the qualifying, non-qualifying thing is an epidemic. And I know you have some experience with the whole ACT thing. You know, people really focus on that. And then what happens is the grade point average gets down, and then you have problems.
You were asked about this before, Jabari Small. What's going on with him?
Jabari Small, he won running back MVP at the Rivals camp over the weekend. He recently switched to running back. He was playing slot and DB at last season at Briarcrest. He's really close with the 2020 offensive tackle. He's got offers from all over the country. Texas offered, I think it was yesterday, Amari Thomas. And with that, you know, Ole Miss has a real in there. Number one, Jabari Small and him are really close. Jabari would really like to play at Ole Miss. Obviously, his dad played here. I'm not sure if he's qualified as a legend, but he was pretty good here from what I've been told. And with that, you know, getting an offer from Ole Miss, you know, them not being the first Power 5 offer even was kind of shocking. North Carolina came and pulled the trigger on him in the last couple weeks during the evaluation period. And Small moving to running back has really helped his recruitment, because when he has the explosiveness and stuff that he does, he doesn't have to display it from a route running standpoint as much as he did when he was playing receiver last year. With Ole Miss and their holdup, they want to see him camp. And the thing is with Small, I talked to him this week when I was at Briarcrest, and he doesn't want to visit again until he has an offer. So there's going to be kind of a miscommunication there, a little bit of a holdup. But I think in the end, he does go, he does camp, and I wouldn't be surprised if he did offer. Because if he works out at running back with the other running back targets they have currently for the class of 2020, which are still kind of emerging, I think he would leave with an offer.
Do you think Devontae Dobbs or Kenyon Green make it back to campus for an official visit?
Everybody in the country wants both those kids. I would say that they have a more realistic chance, believe it or not, with the kid from Detroit, Devontae Dobbs, getting him back for an official. Because he was here for such a short time on their big bus tour they took during spring break. He was really intrigued by the possibilities of Ole Miss, the recent history they have at left tackle, and potentially getting back for an official. That if he doesn't make, you know, one of those early commitments to Michigan State or to, you know, potentially another school in the Big Ten, I could see him definitely taking an official. With Kenyon Green, it seems like the Texas schools are entrenched in a battle with him. He's got LSU after him. He's got Alabama. I mean, he's more of a wild card, I guess you could say. But Dobbs, because Dobbs has already been here and seen a little bit of Oxford and a little bit of Ole Miss, spent a little bit of time with the coaches, I would say he's more apt to, because he already knows a little bit going into it. Like, he has a little bit of the background info, but he wants to get the meat of the campus and everything.
All right. Charger Rebel has some good questions that are different than just the weekly updates on kids. I'll start with the first one. Do you sense any big NCAA policy changes in terms of recruiting coming in the near future?
I think that they need to. I mean, like, you know, you were making a joke about the eighth grader getting an offer. There needs to be some kind of limitation. I think in softball and baseball, they did something like that recently where, you know, you can talk, you can have conversations, they can visit and everything, but you can't officially extend a scholarship offer. Because let's be real here, a 2022 kid, the entire coaching staff currently in Oxford might not be in Oxford anymore when the class of 2022 is graduating. The offer is nice and the publicity is nice.
2022 kid is an eighth grader. He is finishing the eighth grade.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't need to be making a college decision, frankly.
Exactly.
There's no way that he can make an educated college decision as an eighth grader unless he is a kid, and we'll get to this part of this in a minute, who, let's say, he grew up a Missouri fan and he's a big Missouri fan and he's going to go to Missouri, whether it's Gary Pinkel or whether it's, and I know he's not there anymore, or whether it's Barry Odom or whether it's me. He would go to Missouri to play for me. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Most kids are not in that boat. You don't, the recruiting of seventh and eighth graders, I'm not talking about the evaluation of them, the recruiting of them, I don't like it. It's bad.
Well, then another thing you have is you have seventh and eighth graders playing at these charter schools. Like, there's Freedom Prep in Memphis where their starting quarterback is in eighth grade and they're playing against high school competition. And with that, you know, his recruitment's taken off. He has offers from South Carolina and some other schools. And with that, he has a chance to develop and everything. But at the same time, he's what, 14, 15?
Invite him to your camps. Work with him. Get to know him. That's fine. But the whole offer thing, it's, I don't know. It doesn't matter. But here's what does matter. Kid gets an offer from Alabama as an eighth grader. Counts on that offer for 4 years. Then the offer disappears his senior year.
That happens a lot because you see, like, when ESPN, like, parades these kids that are in eighth grade, you know, puts them on magazines. Like, for instance, was it Dylan Moses a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had an offer from everyone.
Yeah. He had an offer from everyone, yes. But, you know, as things kind of winded down, There was some talk about some schools possibly, you know, trying to replace him. And it was just interesting to see all of that happen. And then there's a quarterback. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But he was in eighth grade and seventh grade when he got a USC offer from Lane Kiffin, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And that never materialized. So, I mean, yeah, but it's great at that moment. And recruiting is so much about the moment and making the most of the moment from a marketing and a social media standpoint, especially in today's world. I mean, you've got coaches and colleges and graphic design editors. You've got all of them, even like making these Fortnite edits, and it's all just to capitalize on the here and now. They're not worried about where that kid's going to go in 2020 or 2021. They're worried about right now and capitalizing. And really what it is it's about being seen, which is sad but true. You know, a lot of these coaches are doing this for the attention to the program that they might not otherwise get. That's why you see schools like South Carolina offering eighth graders, or you see like when Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic, I think he's offered he may have offered another middle schooler since being at Florida Atlantic. And that's like a strategy for him. And it's a way to gain exposure that program might not otherwise gain.
How do you differentiate between guys that are actually good players and guys that look good in controlled environments and camps? It's a good question.
Whenever you see somebody who excels in the 7-on-7 circuit, the camp circuit, or you know, even just like regular football camps, you go back and watch the tape, and you see whether or not he, you know, the technique is still the same, whether or not in covers they're still doing the exact same thing they were doing in 7-on-7. Because a lot of kids, what they'll do is they specialize in 7-on-7. There's a recruit in Mississippi from last year's class I can remember vividly. Everybody wanted him once they saw him playing 7-on-7. He blew up, got offers from everybody, committed to an SEC school early. Everything fell through with that on his own. And then people watched him play his senior season, and they were like, that's not the kid I was watching. And that's something that a lot of people are weary of. And that's why, you know, Ole Miss is extending offers, you know, outside of their region on the offensive line, for example. And they do not want to do what they did last year when they had committed an offensive lineman from Ohio, had him camp, and they were, let's say it nicely, less than impressed with his performance. And things kind of went from there. They do not want that to happen again, which is why, like I said, you know, when you see, like, let's say, for example, Jaden Hill, the cornerback from Bob Jones Madison in Alabama. camped at Ole Miss last year, really did well, and he continues to do really well in the camp circuit. But once you put on the tape, you see a cornerback who, you know, has completely different technique and does completely different things from a ball skill standpoint, from a jamming at the line standpoint, and from a press coverage standpoint that in 7-on-7 than he does on his film. And that's something that has kind of worried a little bit of coaches, and that's why, you know, schools like Alabama may not have pulled the trigger yet.
How hard is it to get your foot in the door and get the recruits to trust you when you first started in this?
Well, at first I was working for SB Nation, and let me tell you, that was tough. It was really tough because, you know, when you're not at a reputable news source like Rivals is, and, you know, side note, I'm really excited about our new agreement with Rivals and the future with everything with Rivals and Rebel Grove. But with that, you know, with SB Nation, it was tough. You know, it was really tough to get kids to respond. It's really tough to get kids to answer the phone. But once you get to a reputable news source like Rivals and you have that in your back pocket at any time, you know, like when you want a kid to follow you back, you'll say, like, follow back Russell Johnson from rebelgrove.com/rivals.com. And 90% of the time between that and the check mark on Twitter, they'll follow back and the conversation goes from there. But at first, it's really tough. There came a couple times where I was a little worried I was ever going to be able to move up and stop covering the MAC because kids would just stop answering. And in Ohio, a lot of coaches were turned off by the fact that their kids were getting coverage in the spring. That's another topic for another day, the state of Ohio and off-season programs. But with that, it changed as I grew. And as I grew, I also, you know, kind of learned different conversation tactics, ways to begin conversations and things like that, to the point to where it's gotten pretty simple. And I basically have a spreadsheet of, like, the things I ask when someone gets an offer, the things I ask when someone goes on a visit, the things I ask when they drop a top schools list, things like that. You know, being able to become organized and everything like that, that's been huge. And I didn't have that when I first started.
Oh, this is a good one. Do you find that recruits are more NCAA, meaning college football, or NFL fans?
College football. There are a couple who like the NFL. Like, I talked to a couple of receivers, and they're like, oh, I loved Calvin Johnson. And I was like, you know he went to Georgia Tech. And they're like, no, I didn't know that. I thought he just played for the Lions. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, how did he do in Georgia Tech's offense? I was like, well, you saw how he did. He was a top draft pick. But a lot of kids, they're really, really – high on college football, to the point to where they'll watch their film on Saturday mornings, and then they'll go and they'll watch college football all day on Saturday, whether they're at a game or not at a game, visiting or not visiting. They'll spend their Saturday watching college football, and then on Sunday, normally, that's when they normally either do their homework, you know, the high school kids do have homework to do, and or they're working out, and with that, they're not really paying as much attention to the NFL, which I would be kind of weary of and scared of as an NFL. If I was, you know, invested in the NFL, or if I was a coach or a potential scout, because that shows a lot of people, a lot of kids. I hate to say it, but it needs to be said. A lot of kids are chasing offers, and you'll notice that when they'll number blessed to get my 44th offer from University of Louisiana Monroe, and with that, you know, yeah, it's nice to have that offer, but.
Well, that's the offer.
I hate that I picked that school, but
what are you saying?
I'm saying
the offer. I mean, kids can have offers from all over, and then they get the offer. The coach calls him in and says, "Mikey, you got the offer." And he says, "Coach, don't mess with me." No, I'm not messing with you, Mikey. This is finally happened. All your hard work is paid off. And he calls and he goes, "Mom, ULM." And mom screams these shrieks of joy, knowing that her son's going to have an opportunity not only to play football at one of the premier schools in all of the land, but to receive an academic degree from Harvard on the Bayou.
Harvard on the Bayou. I actually saw a kid tweet out an offer from Louisiana Lafayette this week, and he tweeted out pictures of ULM. I was laughing for a while.
They're just chasing offers. They want to accumulate as many as they can.
Yeah, exactly. And when they do that, you know, it kind of turns off some of the bigger coaches. But, you know, with that, that shows they love the process. A lot of kids love the process. They don't love talking to reporters. So some of them do. Some of them don't. And they don't love the star ratings. You know, everybody will say once they get bumped from a 4 to a 3, oh, well, stars don't matter anyway. And with that, you know, it just shows the lack of true love for the game of football, which would scare me for the future of the NFL.
Naples believer asks, I know you don't want to comment on it, on if players will qualify, but will recent events coming to light slowly have any effect on Lovett's situation?
I assume he's talking about Fab Lovett from Olive Branch, who signed with Mississippi State. I don't see those two being correlated whatsoever.
Okay.
Lovett's been able to attain the things that he's needed to, at least to my knowledge, to be able to enroll down there in the fall.
Does Ole Miss have a real chance in the recruitments of Nathan Pickering, Byron Young, or Demonte Russell?
See, this one I kind of was going back and forth on, because the one kid on that list who's committed somewhere is the kid they have the best chance with. Pickering's got interest from all over. He's really, really high on Auburn, Mississippi State, and a couple others, Georgia to name, for example, again. Byron Young's all over the place. Alabama's probably the top school for him. And Diamante Russell is currently committed to Mississippi State, but when I went out there to Provine during spring practice, was able to sit down and talk to him for a little bit, and he seems like somebody who's definitely still going to take an official visit to Ole Miss and is really still interested and still hearing from them a lot. So I would say they have the best chance with Russell, which is a little bit odd because he's the only one of the three, like I said, that's currently committed somewhere.
What can Ole Miss do from an academic side to improve recruiting? The PE degree would help, I think.
The thing that they've been doing is, what is it called, the Rebel Bounce Back Program?
The deal with Jarrell Poe where he came back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know the details of that, but I know for a fact that that's probably beneficial for recruiting, because a lot of kids, they'll leave after 3 years and go to the NFL. Like, for example, let's say Greg Little leaves after next year, doesn't graduate, and wants to come back after he retires. They have this program where he's able to do so, and likely, I don't know, like I said, I don't know the details. I don't know if he's able to do so, you know, if it's out of his pocket or if it's out of the athletic program's pocket or whatever, but he's able to go back and finish his degree, which is something that a lot of parents are weary of when kids are committing to schools and, you know, I'll be going to the next school for 3 years. And with that, it's become a thing, basically, where, you know, being able to come back after you graduate is something that's important. You know, parents, coaches, they love seeing that stuff. High school coaches especially, being able to see, like you said, for example, it was Jarrell Poe, being able to go back to school and graduate. And I think there were a couple others who are either doing so or are going to be doing so in the next couple of years.
I know you haven't been working much lately, so those recruiting profiles, you know, you get on those.
That's gonna go down when the summer months, when there's really not much going on. I mean, those have been being worked on. I mean, it takes a while and been a little bit busy.
Let's see. I'm trying to decide whether to ask this one. Is the Calvin Green loophole now a legitimate precedent that can be used blatantly and be above board by other schools? How can it not be now that this is in the official record? Also, how much does this change recruiting now that acquaintances of a recruit? And he gets into specifics. There is a certain loophole that got created there. There's no question about it.
It's been known. It's not anything new.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. There's. It's one of the reasons that I've said this before. Ole Miss wasn't doing anything that everybody else wasn't doing. In fact, Ole Miss wasn't doing as much as most everybody else was doing. But what they were doing, it really sloppy.
Yeah, sloppy and unorganized. From what I've gathered and learned and, you know, understood since joining this beat in 2016, that seems to be really what the problem was. It wasn't what they were doing. It was how they were doing it and how it was being documented. And, you know, obviously having that coach on the road wasn't the best idea, and other schools are doing it now. So it's interesting to see, you know, how much recruiting has changed, and it continues to change. But, like I was saying, the loophole has been present for a while, And I don't expect that to stop anytime soon. I just expect it to stop gaining the news coverage that it has. JUCO coaches all over the country do that. And what happens is, you know, the in-state programs with the school are normally the ones that are able to do so. Like Kansas and Kansas State have a blessing in their backyard because they have so much talent in the Kansas JUCOs, and they're able to normally get that. That's why I was actually a little bit surprised, and going off topic a little bit, that Ole Miss was able to land Vernon Dasher from Coffeyville because Kansas State wanted him so badly. But when Kansas and Kansas State have that at their back, Arizona and Arizona State have Arizona Western, who competed in the national championship with East Mississippi this past season. When they have those kind of things, they are able to build relationships and build or find, you know, previous relationships that there's been, like he said, with, you know, having acquaintances from several years ago, being able to find any type of tie-in they possibly can to be able to get something done. I mean, that's never not been present in recruiting.
What do some recruits see in Starkville? This is from Swag for Heisman. What do some recruits see in Starkville that I don't/can't? I'm going to attempt to answer this somewhat honestly. The stuff that you as an adult see in Oxford that makes Oxford cool, and Oxford's cool. Some of the five-star restaurants and the chefs and the bars and the stuff that makes Oxford cool. The kids see that, and it's cool. But those kids are not eating at St. Leo all the time. That's not what they're doing. The stuff that's appealing to those kids, typically, they got to keep in mind, they're 17 and 18-year-old kids. These are not kids any more than you were at 17 or 18 in all likelihood. These are not sophisticated palates that are out researching who has the best wine list. And I'm not making fun of places that have great restaurants and cool wine lists, because I like those places. I like those places a lot. But I like them more today at 48 than I did at 17. When you're 17, oh, you got Buffalo Wild Wings? Cool.
Exactly.
And so a lot of the stuff that you view as somewhat generic in places like Starkville and elsewhere, Oxford has it too, to kids, that's cool places. That's where they go.
That's a good way to put it. And then, again, the staff Mississippi State's been able to assemble. Like, I wrote a story on Eric Gray, the running back from Lausanne. I went up there and watched him practice far too early in the morning, by the way. He was like, yeah, we practice at 7 a.m. I was like, what? Because they don't actually have spring practice. So, you know, I got up early, made my trip up there, talked to him and quite a few of his other kids. And he really, really mentioned the fact that Charles Huff, the running back coach there, coached Saquon Barkley. And that's kind of a double-edged sword, because he's also interested in Penn State and visiting there. And I'm interested to see what he thinks of, you know, State College, Pennsylvania, compared to Starkville, Mississippi, compared to Oxford, Mississippi, compared to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Because a lot of kids, even just last year, I would say that the way that Ole Miss used the facility, not the facilities, but the around the area places and everything, the environment of Oxford is a nice way to put it. The way they used that as signing day approached cost them on a couple kids. A couple kids aren't all about, you know, going out on a Friday night and doing things they're not supposed to and being with people they're not supposed to and being at places they're not supposed to. But with that, they get the kids that they want to get, like the quarterback they have on campus right now. And then when it comes to that, when it comes to later in the process, some of these kids are, you know, go back and they think about their visits and they're like, you know, that was nice, but, you know, that's not what I want to do on my Friday nights when I'm done with football practice, or that's not what I want to do during our bye week, things like that. And Starkville has, like you said, they have, you know, probably Buffalo Wild Wings. I know they have a cookout because that's where I ate when I was there, because I ran out of time and restaurants were closed when I was there last week.
I just don't think that's a big thing to athletes and stuff.
No, I mean,
I think they view these schools, honestly, I'll be honest, I think they view all these schools as roughly the same.
Yeah,
And then it comes down to people relationships. I don't think a kid picks a school because their stadium's bigger. I don't think a kid picks a school because some of the amenities that are superfluous inside a football building. I don't think anybody goes to Alabama for the waterfall.
Yeah,
I think it comes down to relationships.
Where you feel like home.
Yeah, these are all SEC programs. They're all big time programs. All 14 of them. They really are. They're all big time programs, and they're all staffed by professional salespeople and support staffs and all of the stuff, and they do a great job in recruiting. All of them do. They do. I mean, we can nitpick and make fun and all that stuff, but they all do elite jobs recruiting, and it comes down to kids always say it. I felt home there. I see it with my daughter. We're looking at schools. What felt right? What campus kind of felt like you? Was there a vibe? Did you kind of pick up on it? Was it good? You know, that stuff. It's that. So it's, and I can't do it either because I'm not a 17-year-old, but, and I'm sure, certainly not a 17-year-old looking for a football program.
Yeah.
I just think a lot of the stuff that we think, we being like just grown people think, oh, that would be great. That would be cool. How about so? This is so charming and stuff like that. I don't think that factors in. Now it might factor in with their parents a little bit, but mm-hmm. it doesn't factor in with the kids.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
In my opinion.
I mean, the thing that's really big is, you know, like the places like Gus's Fried Chicken, like recruits love to eat there, and then moving that off the square is generally going to be a good idea because the student athletes, they don't live on the square.
Right.
I'm not sure if that went into, you know, the factoring of anything, but
I think it was just getting away from the rent, but you're right.
Yeah, well, probably that too.
Real quick, because we've gone long. 2020 quarterback picture look like?
They've been offering a ton of kids at the 2020 quarterback position. They've currently got quite a few out in Texas. You've got Braden Simpson. You've got, obviously, you still have Jack Miller, the quarterback from Arizona that everybody wants. I think he's going to end up at Ohio State. I think that's probably been done actually for a while. And then they've also got their hand in the fire with Hudson Card, a kid from Toledo, Riley Keller, and then Will Rogers from Brandon continues to develop. And I'm not sure right now if he's going to be able to develop into an SEC quarterback, but the more I see him, the more I see, you know, him being able to go through his progressions faster and developing as a Division I quarterback, which is something that you didn't necessarily see last year on tape.
We'll stop there. I'll leave you some questions that you can answer on your Facebook Live or whatever venue you choose to do with that here at the end of this week. Our thanks again to Ronnie Hamilton from earlier today. That was really a nice visit with him. Hope you guys enjoyed that. We'll try to bring you some more content with the new coaches, let you get to know those guys as the summer progresses. Russell's back on the road. You going to Olive Branch?
Yeah, I'll be at Olive Branch and at Memphis Central on Friday. I'm going to try to squeeze in two scrimmages in one night.
I would call you a Warrior, but that's a negative thing. So I won't. I'll just call you a Celtic.
Oh, there you go.
You're a Celtic. You play hard. You get the most out of your abilities.
We'll see. There you go. I mean, that's all you got to do, especially this time of year. A lot of people are just, you know, putting their feet up, going swimming, and here I am on the road.
That's right. You're hitting the road. All right, so Russell's getting on the road. Again, our thanks to Ronnie Hamilton. I'm Neil McCready. That does it for this edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. We will either be back first of next week or we'll come back in a week with a really big extravaganza blowout camp preview sort of show. So until then, take care.